This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together. Hello, universe. Welcome back. It is your boy with another episode of A Lost Plot. As always, I am your host, Maverick, and today we are bringing back one of the classics. It's Andrew. Thank you for coming back, Andrew.
What's up?
He's always bringing in a different intro. So today we are going to talk about another in the series you guys have all been hearing throughout this time. We will get through it eventually. That's right, Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. We'll get to that in a minute, but first, we do want to say thank you to all of those people who are listening in. We especially wanted to point out one of the people who left a review on the Apple Podcasts app. One of you, Goody1128, left a review that said, "Lots of fun. It's great to revisit some of my favorite movies. The discussions are fun, and it's interesting to hear the host's perspective on movies that I have seen a bunch of times." So thank you again for your review. It really makes a difference for us if you leave one of those. So go ahead. If you haven't done that, please do that. We really appreciate it. Back to the show. Today we are talking about, as I said, Star Wars Attack of the Clones. It was released in 2002. It's an American epic space opera written by George Lucas and Jonathan Hales and directed by George Lucas. It stars Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, Natalie Portman as Padme Amidala, Ian McDiarmid as Sheev Palpatine, Darth Sidious, the whole whatever that's going on there. I didn't know his first name was Sheev, by the way, before this moment, so...
You noob.
Yeah, exactly. So that maybe there goes my qualifications, but...
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly. Andrew, give us the full rundown. What is this about?
Without talking in Star Wars terms, this is basically a movie about an assassination attempt. And it starts out showing the representative from a planet and a failed assassination attempt. And then you start to see certain characters pop up and you see an effort to prevent an assassination. And what quickly unfolds is what is meant to be almost like a mystery thriller type movie, where you're unraveling this plot and you have certain elements where you have, on one end, you have a Jedi protecting the senator and doing a little bit more than that. And then on the other hand, you have a Jedi who's investigating the disappearance of an entire planet. And so those ultimately end up coming back together towards the end of the movie in a climactic battle. You confront someone who was once a Jedi, but is now, you find out, leading an entire descent from the Republic. Because at the beginning of the movie, you have a united front. And this movie is about the separation of that into two separate forces now known as the Republic and the Separatists.
Interesting. I haven't heard a summary like that before, but I see where it's coming from. So that's pretty good. Now, for the rating system, I don't know if you had a chance to go through that, Andrew.
I did not. I need to go do that now. I'll do that while you're talking. How do I find this?
I'll just put it in the comment section. But
see, I looked up A Lost Plot, Maverick, and I can't say what came up.
Okay. Okay. That's not what we're looking for. What we are looking for is the rating system. But so for my rating for this movie, I don't remember. I'll have to look back at what my episode one rating was. But for this one, I gave it a solid, a little
all
lower
considered,
than...
That's not that bad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
About what I would give it right off the top of my head. I'd probably give it more like a 4.5, like right in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, I'm kind of like scrolling back to see what I gave episode one, because I feel like it was not that far off from that. I don't know. I'm not going to be too worried about that. But
I mean, do you want to just work through these points little by little?
Yeah. So overall, the first opening scene, what did you think of how they had this whole introduction with them landing in Coruscant, the main capital, and then you see them getting off the ship blows up, and then you see, just this realization that the queen was, or sorry, the senator was not actually on that ship, and she still survived, the assassination attempt failed, and then you have everything after that. How did you think for an opening scene? Was that gripping? Did it catch your attention? Was it engaging? What'd you think?
I think, well, again, we've talked about this before with Star Wars movies. It has the classic opener. You've got the scroll, you've got space, and it kind of zooms down to the planet below. So in terms of that, I think it does well. And I think it does, like, in terms of what the movie is going for, because this is a very different Star Wars movie than any other Star Wars movie that's ever been made in terms of the type of movie and the plot that's being created. And unfortunately, I don't think they do it very well, like in terms of the whole movie. And I can get into that later. But I think in terms of the opener of trying to have like some sort of like mystery, almost thriller type movie, it's like, okay, I think it's pretty good because you don't know what's going on. You see a ship land. You see Padme get out of a different ship and you're already starting to question. Then you see the ship blow up and you're like, oh, she – and they like – there's dialogue. And they do a good job of showing and not telling within that dialogue because they're not telling you what happened. But based on what's being said, you can kind of piece together what's going on.
Yeah. So they're pretty good at showing, not telling, for sure. Did you think that especially after that, because you then have – you really have this section between the very, very opening scene, right? But then the introduction of the movie itself before they really get involved in the conflict, where you have the introduction, the reintroduction of the Jedi, the reintroduction of all these characters. Did you think that those also compelled you into the movie, especially showing these main characters, these side characters, all of that?
When I think of the scene, I'm not thinking it is amazing, it is phenomenal, it's beautiful, gorgeous. But it's like I'm thinking and I'm just kind of like, I think they did a pretty good job of incorporating characters in a way that made sense without like putting it in your face. Because it's like, sure, the Jedi Council would be involved if there's been assassination attempts. And so like you have council members there, Yoda, Mace Windu. And the way they introduce Anakin and Obi-Wan also makes a decent amount of sense. It's like, oh, they just got back. You see him in the elevator. He sees Padme. It's like, oh, I haven't seen you in 10 years. It's a little cringy, but like at the same time, I mean, they had to bring Jar Jar back, unfortunately, but like they did a decent job, I think, of reincorporating the characters while also still building towards or on the plot line that they had already in mind.
I'd agree. I wouldn't say it's my favorite opener, especially for considering Star Wars movies where pretty quickly you often have some sort of action going on. In this case,
it's a different type of opener than most Star Wars movies.
Yeah, for compared to other Star Wars movies, it's very unique. And I think it's a little slower maybe than a lot of those. And so and I think they want to establish things like Anakin's older and stuff like that. So I don't know that it's a terrible opener. And most of these got solid points, but they didn't get highest points on them just because it was like somewhat mediocre at parts. So I think they had things, you know, like Anakin, who he's clearly the main character, right? Unless you think otherwise.
Well, I mean, we can get to that later, but I think for the sake of the podcast, I'd agree he's the main character. Like, and also for just the sake of trying to understand the plot, it makes the most sense for him to be the main character.
Sure. I mean, and I know we've had this discussion multiple times, especially around the Star Wars movies, most significantly around Episode One, which was a little more unclear on that. Would you say that in this one that it's pretty clear that Anakin is the main character, or would you make a pitch for Obi-Wan again?
I wouldn't make a pitch for Obi-Wan. I think Obi-Wan, though, is almost like in a weird spot between main character and side character because there's a lot of screen time that's devoted to just Obi-Wan. You have like his whole pursuit of this, like this lead that he gets from the dart. He goes to that diner. He talks to Dex. He goes from the diner to the archives. And he goes from the archives to Yoda. Then he goes from Yoda to flying to Kamino. Oh, I can't believe I forgot that. Then he goes and he fights Jango Fett. Then he goes from there to Geonosis. And then finally he's reunited with Anakin. And I don't know the total screen time he has, but it's a decent amount of screen time for a side character.
No, and that's it's a whole nother section of the movie that's it all gets tied together at the end, right? So it's not like it's unimportant, but it definitely, like, this movie compared to a lot of movies, I would say jumps around a lot and goes all over. And so that's where I think some of the like, if you're a Star Wars nerd, right, and you're watching this to get the expanded universe type of lore thing, this thing goes all over in that. But if in regards to, I think, a cohesive storyline, I do think that draws back a little bit from it because there's so much going on. And like you said, they focus so much on Obi-Wan, but they also focused a lot on Anakin. And they're not really connected except for at the very beginning and very end.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard to keep the storyline cohesive.
And I mean, I think that's one of the things, like, again, that makes it so much different than episodes 4, 5, and 6, where 4, 5, and 6, you have the trio of characters that are like the main characters. And it's very clear that Luke is the one who's like, he's the one who's the main character. But Han and Leia are also there, and you typically have them together. And the one place you don't see that, and like 4 very much has them all together. But I think it's interesting because I can't think of another, well, I think Lord of the Rings does this too, to be honest. But like 5 and 6 start doing that a lot too, where you start breaking it apart. And in 5, you have Luke leaving Hoth, going to Dagobah, and you have Han and Leia being pursued by the Empire. And then in 6, you have Luke on Dagobah, you have Han and Leia. And then they come together for Endor, but then Luke leaves. And for like the last 30, 40 minutes of the movie, they're not together until like the last minute or so.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, I mean, honestly, like when you said it, I thought, oh yeah, that is weird. But like, as I'm thinking it through, there are a lot of movies that do that. Especially when you have such a large world that you've built, like Lord of the Rings, Hobbit. You have, sometimes you kind of have to split off and pursue two different things, two different like minor arcs, and then you see how they come together in the end. And Lord of the Rings definitely does that with, like, you have the Fellowship in the first movie and you don't really split off, but the Two Towers is like, and Return of the King is just, you have Sam and Frodo, you have Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, then Gandalf kind of joins up. You have Merry and Pippin. Merry and Pippin get split up. Like, there's just so many things going on there.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's a very excellent point, because after, especially having just reviewed Two Towers, there's a sense in which in that movie there is a very it's a little disjointed because you don't get them coming back together, so you don't get that holistic feel to it like you do in a lot of other movies, right? And if you didn't have Return of the King, it wouldn't be a complete story. It wouldn't make sense. And I think that's part of the reason why the Two Towers is rated or is viewed generally as the least preferable of the three movies. Just based on discussions I have with people, because it doesn't have that same story arc. The other thing too with those movies is that, frankly, they are way longer than these movies.
Yeah.
And they have so much extra time to develop these characters that you get a fuller picture of what's going on in those cases than you do in a movie like this. So
yeah,
because that is interesting what you say about episode 5 and episode 6. About that separation. And I'm not, because I would say that episode 5 and 6 are definitely, or they at the very least feel more cohesive as movies than this one does. And I wonder if that has to do with the like the overarching themes that are going into those, because you definitely still have a sense of the maybe not clearly family in the 5th one, so that's why I'm hesitant to say that, but like the obligations to each other that they have, and how even when they're apart to some degree, you still feel that, where, you know, Luke feels as soon as he realizes they're in danger, he has to go save them. And then Leia, as soon as she knows that he's there, tries to tell him it's a trap and things like that, where it's like you still see this interconnectedness in their emotional state than you do, I think, in this one, where I just, and this is me analyzing it here, so I could be easily proven wrong on this, but I don't get the impression that there's even a thematic connection between these the two halves of this movie compared to the two halves of these other Star Wars ventures.
I think another thing that makes the prequels so much different than the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. So with the original trilogy, it's very basic world building. You have an empire and you have a rebellion. And honestly, you don't really see much of the rebellion because like Andor and Rogue One do a really good job of showing the complexities and the inner workings of the rebellion and how it's not as united and idealistic as like 4, 5, and 6 make it out to be. Because 4, 5, and 6 is a very mature version of the rebellion. They're established. They know what they want. The leadership is very well established. And so like there's not too much building going into it. Same with the Empire. You have an established imperial force that's just dominating everything in its path. And all you have to do is focus on the characters because the world's been established. It's very basic, especially considering the fact that this came – 4, 5, and 6 came out during a time when this type of like idea of like an empire or like the Soviet Union, it's already been established. And so – like it's a very basic idea for anyone watching it too. Whereas 1, 2, and 3 have the whole world to build on top of establishing characters because you have like the first movie, you have a republic. And I think what's unfortunate is a lot of the power dynamics that go into play. Like if you watch 1, 2, and 3 as the story of Sheev Palpatine instead of Anakin, there's actually a lot of power dynamics that go into it. And 2 is actually an essential stepping stone for how Palpatine comes to power.
Right.
And there's so much that goes into that that has to be established as well. And these are even scenes that like when – if you watch like director's cuts and like interviews with the people who made the movie and like the screenwriting, they heavily debated – like certain scenes and they had to pick and choose because there were certain scenes that just didn't focus on Anakin but were necessary to explaining how Palpatine got to power. And so they had to put them in there to make the story overall make sense and so that they could get to 4 because that's where 1, 2, and 3 were going. They had to end in a place where 4 was possible to happen. But in order to do that, there were essential things that had to happen with Palpatine. And so – I mean, it works out that Anakin ends up being in a lot of scenes with Palpatine, but like there are other scenes where you have like Palpatine in the like on the Senate floor, and there's no Anakin, there's no Obi-Wan, there's no Padme. I mean, you might have Yoda and Mace Windu, and or Jar Jar Binks, which unfortunately he did play a role in this movie,
but no. A pretty significant role too.
True, but like there's so much that goes on there that you have. You have to unpack that you didn't have to unpack with 4, 5, and 6. And so I think that that one element is what shifts so much of the quality of these movies when you're trying to fit that much in the same amount of time that you had for 4, 5, and 6.
Right. Just and by saying that, you're meaning there's these under – there's a subtext here in this movie that pulls maybe – What's the word I'm looking for? It's not like there isn't subtexts in 4, 5, and 6, but those more closely align with the arc that exists within that storyline versus these ones. You know, he's trying to still tell the story of Anakin Skywalker, right? And his rise and fall. But at the same time, there are other things going on that are necessary to fully developing this arc that aren't directly related to Anakin. And you can maybe debate to the necessity of, let's just say, Dooku and the Separatists and Obi-Wan's involvement, right? But some of those other scenes that are less prevalent but still very necessary, like you're saying with Palpatine on the Senate floor and granting emergency powers through a Gungan to that man and stuff like that.
Yeah. In terms of this, it goes back to why I said episode 1 would be better if it didn't exist because you have so much that has to be put in order to make this world make sense. But when you spend an entire movie focusing on stuff that does not get us to where we need to be at the end of 3, you make it even harder to incorporate all of that. And now you just have 2 movies instead of 3. And so I think – like it's difficult, but it's definitely doable. And it's not like there's no world building in 4, 5, or 6. There's still world building. It's just not as much and you don't need as much because it's a much more basic world that you are constructing for the audience. Whereas there's a couple problems that they had with 1, 2, and 3. First, you have to build a specific world. So there is a requirement to get where you need to be with 4. And it's not just the world. Uh-huh. You also have to progress the character of Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, these characters that we know and love from 4, 5, and 6, and who we've seen the end of their arc. But now we need the beginning of their arc. And so it makes it difficult when you're going out of order, but you need to have them in there and you need to incorporate them. I mean, you also have R2-D2 and C-3PO, but they're not major players in a way that need character building. They're droids.
Right. Go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought.
So that's the first problem. The second problem is one just spent so much time going nowhere. You mean
in this one or in the first one?
The first movie. The first movie, episode one, it went nowhere. And I mean, I think I'd feel pretty confident saying this. The one thing that I can think of, and I thought about this during the podcast we did for 1-2, that one did that we needed was it established how Palpatine became Chancellor. But we didn't need that. Like, honestly, we didn't need to know how he got to be Chancellor. We could have just said he is Chancellor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like that whole thing with him, like, manipulating and the Trade Federation and getting them to go there and then trying – having a vote of no confidence for Chancellor Valorum. Like, all of that is interesting, but it's not necessary. And it doesn't really add to the deviousness or the manipulation of Palpatine, because we get plenty of that in 2 and 3. And so, like, I mean, the biggest show of that is when Palpatine takes emergency powers in this movie. And like, you see that with his interactions with Anakin. And so I think just the three major ones is that they're building a lot bigger world than 4, 5, and 6. Two, they are having to build a very specific world, and they have very specific things they need to accomplish, but they also want to do other things outside of that. And so there's like a quota they have to fill on top of the things they want to add. And then finally, the fact that one just didn't do any of that.
Well, yeah. And here's the other thing too, is that with that stuff with Palpatine, right, you have so much time dedicated to that in both of these movies. And Palpatine is not someone you're emotionally attached to in any way, either negatively or positively at this point in the movies. Like, he's not, you don't really get the sense like, oh, he's this guy we really want to become chancellor or to gain power in the Senate. But you also don't have a sense in which like, oh, he's a despicable man, we don't want to see him win, right? There's almost a net neutral attraction to anything about this character as a character. And so the fact that they spend so much time on it is understandable because he's necessary for later in the movies, especially in 3 and onward. But in regards to actually adding emotional value and weight to the first two movies, it doesn't really do that.
I mean, I think I've said what I have to say in terms of like why I think there are problems overall with the story.
No, and that's good. Do you think that the obstacle in this movie is a compelling obstacle? Specifically, like, is Anakin sacrificing something or have something at risk for him that he highly values? And is the villain compelling? And this might go into a broader discussion of like, what is the goal of this movie?
Yeah. And I think it again, it's interesting because with Star Wars, there's so much they're accomplishing that it's hard to just focus on the one character, because you're not just telling the story of Anakin Skywalker. You're telling the story of the fall of the entire Galactic Republic. And so there's a lot more in there than just the character. And I think it's one of the things that's so interesting about Star Wars, because when you do it right, it's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. When you do it well, like, you tell the story of an entire universe on top of telling the story of a character, it's phenomenal. I mean, you get the music and you get the visual effects, you get all of it. I just think episode 2 doesn't do a good job of that. In terms of like the obstacle, I mean, Anakin's obstacle is like, don't get caught sleeping with the senator. I honestly think Obi-Wan has a lot more of an obstacle than Anakin, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Because his whole thing is there's an entire planet missing. Somebody broke into the Jedi archives and deleted something. And I think like, when I watched it, I was thinking to myself, this doesn't seem like they're putting as much weight on this action as they should be. Because, and it goes back to the show don't tell, that there was a problem with in episode one. Like, somebody broke into the HQ of the Jedi Order and erased a planet from existence. Yeah. And that person had to have been a Jedi. But there's like, we spend so much time focusing on Anakin and his little Riz fest that we don't, like, Obi-Wan's whole thing is kind of like brushed aside. It's like, oh, he's just investigating. Oh, they're just, a planet's missing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, right, when he goes to the librarian, she's like, oh, we couldn't have one missing. That's impossible. And even when he talks to Yoda, like, Yoda doesn't seem concerned. He says, this is very concerning, and then moves on. It's like, okay, right, I'm so concerned right now. I'm literally grabbing the sides of the cushions that I'm sitting on top of right now. Like, my knuckles are going to be bloody, okay? Like, you don't get that. And there's, like, I don't think they do a good job of building up to, like, how problematic this whole situation is.
You're getting, like, the impression of another slavery sucks kind of scene here, where they're not really,
well, it's not nearly genuine as bad, but yes. And I think that goes back to Lucas's poor writing, okay? I will always say, before Disney, Lucas was the best and worst thing that ever happened to Star Wars, okay? George Lucas is single-handedly both been the best thing for Star Wars and the worst thing for Star Wars. He has wonderful ideas. He is a genius when it comes to, like, world building and how he envisions a world. He has great vision, horrible execution. He does not know how to, at least with these movies, he didn't know how to execute that vision in the best way possible. And 4, 5, and 6, which is what is great about them, is he surrounded himself with brilliant people who knew how to take his vision and put it on a screen. You had people like Ralph McQuarrie, who took a cheeseburger and made the Millennium Falcon from it. And he took an X on a napkin and made the X-Wing, one of the coolest spaceships ever. You have – he literally drew the Y-Wing from nothing. Like, he just – he himself envisioned that.
Right.
And he did that with the Y-Wing. He did it with the A-Wing. He designed so many of the different ships there. You have the model builders who set up the models for 4, 5, and 6. Even Lucas's wife was crucial to making these movies happen, because she wrote a lot of the script for 4, 5, and 6. And then they got divorced in the middle of 6. And that very clearly shows with how poorly written the dialogue is for 1, 2, and then most of 3. And what's interesting is, I don't know this for sure, but I do know Lucas was still writing 3 when he was making 4. Like, he knew what he wanted 3 to be. And so, like, it's very plausible to assume that his wife helped him write parts of the script for 3. And I think that's why the dialogue may have been better, if not only just for the fact that he had more time to think it over.
Right. And yeah, because he knew that was the origin point for everything going forward.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. I do think, I mean, I'm personally a stickler for dialogue, but I also understand that dialogue doesn't inherently translate to a bad story. And that's where you see that with, especially episode 4, where the dialogue is very corny, but at the same time, it's still a fantastical movie because the storyline itself is still, it's still strong. Right. And so it doesn't always translate to a bad story, but if you have bad dialogue combined with bad writing and like of the scene itself. Right. So for a thing you keep bringing up, but the Riz factor of Anakin Skywalker in these movies is horrendous. It's what are we even watching right now?
I like sand.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is just so weird. And that's it, yeah. So it's like that whole, it's not just the words he's using, it's the scenario itself that this is even comprehensible. This is how you get a girl. It's yeah. So anyways, I forget where I was going with that.
Coarse and rough.
It's so easy irritating. To get fixated on how stupid like his you. Lines are in this movie.
it gets yeah. everywhere.
So I think going back to what the goal of this movie is, I think when you look at Anakin, his stakes are very involved with Padme and just making sure yeah. that and finding love, honestly, which it's made me think, is this supposed to be a love story set in the space universe? Kind of, but also not exactly too, because you also have the, what you said, the mystery part with yeah. Obi-Wan trying to figure out what's going on with the Separatists and yeah. Dooku and all of that. So it's, and maybe that's part of it, is you have this such a disjointed story because the goals, and maybe this maybe explains the differences as well, is like in episode 5 and episode 6, you have the cohesive goal, they're trying to stop the Empire. Versus in this movie, one half is trying to figure out what's going on, and the other half is trying to find himself a wife and settle down, right? Yeah. And that's so completely different as goals in the movie that it's hard to unite those even at the end and say this is one cohesive storyline.
Yeah, and I think, like, now that you say it, I do think this is really two separate stories. Because Anakin mm-hmm. really does have a purpose in this movie. His purpose is to find purpose. Because
right.
in the first movie, it's established he's very much desires that emotional connection. And you see him grasping for that, even though it's not done very well, for that mm-hmm. connection with Qui-Gon. Like, he right. sees Qui-Gon as almost a father figure. And then when right. Qui-Gon dies, Obi-Wan steps in and becomes that father figure for him. And even at the beginning of 2, he said, like, he drops his lightsaber and they're walking into that bar and Obi-Wan hands him the lightsaber and says, "This is your life." And he like, "Why don't you listen to me?" He's like, "I see you as a father." Mm-hmm. And he even makes a comment again to Padme later when she's like packing her bags. And it's very clear that he does desire this connection with other people. And so mm-hmm. it's like he's searching. It's like episode 1, Anakin was like, "I'm going to be a Jedi. This is going to give me purpose in life." And episode 2 mm-hmm. is like, "I'm a Jedi, but I do not feel fulfilled in life." And so he looks for right. that fulfillment in Padme. And then you kind of see that in 3, he gets that. And that's one of the driving forces for why he's so desperate and why he does what he does in 3 is because he finally found that peace. He finally found the purpose he so desperately wanted. And now there's this looming mm-hmm. threat of him losing it.
Right. And I think that the maturity, I mean, he's not exactly the most mature character for sure, but like the comparative maturity between episode 2 and episode 3 is significant. And that's part yeah. of what drives him very strongly in the third one. And I think that maybe to a certain degree, as a character, he's also matured in believability. So by the third one, you kind of definitely can understand where he's coming from versus the first two. It's a little harder to do that for sure.
Well, I mean, what's interesting is like, it's almost like they gave him a different motivator, because his motivator in 1 is, "I'm a slave. I want freedom."
Right.
It's, I'm going to say it. If you want to filter it out, it's motivator. And it's not bad because of the motivator itself. It's bad because of the way it's portrayed. And so in 2, they give him a different motivator, a girl.
Okay.
And so that motivator becomes much different. And then in 3, mm-hmm. they almost completely abandon the slavery aspect, which is, I think, one of the shortcomings of 3, but we'll talk about that when we get to 3. And they almost completely go for the whole, he wants a connection and he's afraid of losing that connection.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think, again, it goes back to why 1 just it shouldn't exist. And like, we could have what we needed to with just 2, establishing Anakin's pursuit of purpose in life. And then he finds that purpose, and the thing that drives him is the thought of losing it.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. Now, as for the villain.
Yeah, exactly.
As for the villain, I think this is something the movie is lacking, because you have Jango Fett, who seems like is the villain, because it's like, oh, who hired this bounty hunter, this changeling? And then you realize, oh, he's working for Count Dooku. The problem I have with this is the first time we meet Count Dooku, he walks into a room and sees Obi-Wan, and they're just talking it up. Like, they're just having a conversation. And what's interesting is it's almost like they've been messing up with show don't tell for so long that they overcompensate by not telling us anything. And we're just like, who is this Count Dooku character? And then you have Anakin for the rest of the movie who like hates Count Dooku. And you're like,
right.
I get that he's a bad guy, but there's like this rage that Anakin has towards Dooku. And you're like, I don't know where it's coming from.
Right. Well, it's interesting because it's almost like Count Dooku was a scene was cut for him and they never filled in that initial introduction again. And so they just kept going with the movie. And that you're right, because it is very disjointed because they act like this character has been there this entire time and you have some background for him, which isn't always the worst if you at least give some inkling along the way for his value and especially the emotional reason behind why these characters are so caught up with being angry at this character. Because, you know, Count Dooku, if anything, the way he's portrayed, it sounds like, oh, he trained Qui-Gon and he had a very positive experience and they both loved Qui-Gon and he's sad that he's dead and Obi-Wan's sad that he's dead. And they really are more buddies than anything else. It's just we're on the wrong side of the war. Let's try to figure this out, you know, rather than what exactly like you said, that Anakin is enraged with this man and wants to just destroy him.
I think what's unfortunate is that there's so much there that they could have done with Count Dooku that they end up doing later. And like, it all goes back to episode one. I think it would have been so interesting if they were going to do something with one and make it worthwhile to introduce Dooku in one and show his fall from grace. Because that's exactly what was happening during one. Was that was when Count Dooku, and I mean, they established this now with the Tales of the Jedi. They finally got a canonical death for Yaddle. But like the female Yoda.
Yeah.
They completely skip that. And it's like there's so many interesting dynamics that you could play with there, where instead of showing Palpatine as this villain and one, or even having him in there at all, focusing on Count Dooku as this hero who falls from grace. And what makes it so interesting if they had done that is you're showcasing Dooku at the end of his arc, the end of his fall. And you're starting Anakin off, and Anakin's going to end in the exact same place that Dooku did. It's just a bit – it's a lot more of a dramatic fall and has a lot more collateral damage. But their arc is very, very similar.
Right.
Dooku doesn't have the same upbringing, but he starts to lose faith in the Jedi. He falls away. And he had already left the Order many years before episode one. But he's a count. He's also like a revered Jedi master. And the only reason he left was because he just had a disagreement with the Jedi Order. It wasn't like he was a Sith. And then in his time away, he then falls to the dark side. And he's the one who erases the archives. He erases Kamino from the archives, which would have also added to like two and shown it building upon itself. You could have seen like a whole scene of him sneaking in there, deleting the archive. You could have built tension with that and then had it show up in two again. And it would have been a lot more like, I don't want to say emotional, but there would have been more like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for right now, but there's more investment from the audience in what's going on because it's been showcased in the first movie.
Well, and as you're saying this, you make me think a lot about how a lot of these things are developed a lot more thoroughly in the kids' show, ironically enough, of The Clone Wars, right?
Exactly.
Where they have a lot of aspects of what goes on in regards to intrigue and the Clone Wars and Count Dooku and Anakin in regards to the Separatists and the Republic and all of that. and develops that a whole lot more. And in some ways, all of that makes a lot more sense. It's a lot more compelling because you have that background if you watch that. And that almost makes me question if they were to redo, which they're not going to do, but hypothetically, it could have been better if they took two and turned it into two movies, incorporating part of Clone Wars type content into the more what's the word I'm looking for? Like the more political side of things, and yeah, making that one movie, and then the other side being Anakin's romance development as a personal character type thing. And then you have, you know, the romantic side of him on one side and then the political side of him on the other side. And those would have, I think, at least flown together a little more cohesively. I don't know how that would answer the other battles going on, because there's a lot of, Obi-Wan and other things that show up in episode two. So I'm not saying those should be completely deleted or destroyed from record. And obviously we're not doing that in this case. But I'm thinking from a storyline cohesiveness perspective, if we acknowledged, which we have in episode one, that episode one could be hypothetically better if it didn't exist, if you were to replace that with two and turn two into two different movies, I think you would have a more cohesive storyline if you did something along those lines.
Or what you do is you don't make two a love movie. You incorporate one, the fact that Anakin's a kid in the first movie makes it hard to do the whole love story arc. I think what you can do is you scrap one. You can have Dooku as a character who appears more often than just at the end. Like, I think it'd be so interesting if you'd had Anakin and Obi-Wan run in with Dooku. They have a fight. You see that there's tension there. He's a leader of the separatist army. He's not their friend. Or even you just see him like – because up until this point, Dooku hadn't been an outspoken adversary of the Republic. Like the separatist like army didn't exist yet. The droid factories hadn't been exposed yet. Right. So like if you had just seen Dooku like interacting with politicians in Coruscant and like slowly introduced his character – and then had this epic reveal of like, oh, he's the one behind these droid factories. And had like – what it would have also done is it would have allowed you more time to slowly build the tension, the romantic tension between Anakin and Padme, instead of just rushing it in like the span of like, I don't know, a few scenes in one movie, and kind of like changing two a lot and then splitting three into two movies, or just kind of like rearranging some of the stuff that happens there. Unfortunately that none of this is ever going to happen.
of course. Yeah. And we can go in hypotheticals all we want. But I do think it's interesting to think about if this were to be restructured, how could we do it in a way that would be more cohesive than what we had in two, and made it so that it was maybe more compelling, or at least more along the lines of what we saw in 4, 5, and 6. So,
yeah.
Anyways, there is a sense in which heightened tension is important in a movie. Can a movie consistently put these characters from bad situation to a worse situation? Did you think they did that well in this movie?
Obi-Wan, yes. I mean, for Anakin, he got a little more romantic tension, kind of kept increasing until they're like in the room and he's like, I love you. I've loved you for so long. How could you not love me? She's like, I mean, honestly, I think the appropriate response would be, I met you when you were 9. I haven't seen you in 10 years.
Not, yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't be appropriate. You're a Jedi. I'm a senator. It'd be, you've been thinking about me for 10 years? And I haven't even seen you? Are you okay?
Yeah. I've been an adult over here, you know, passing laws. And you've been off, you know, who knows doing what.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that Anakin gets a lot of downtime in this movie, which does pull away from, I think, some of that ability to ratchet up the tension in this movie and make you really emotionally invested. A lot less of that. But Obi-Wan is pretty good. He still gets a little bit of a win here and there. So even that, I think, could have used some work. Overall, it's still definitely engaging for him. And because it's more of a mystery on his side than necessarily a But I don't think it has the same opera, space opera type feel that the rest of the movies do, even for his storyline. There's also trying to integrate that. But anyways, is there any like big revelations in this movie, or did it have a surprise ending? Like, what did you think of this?
I mean, I think that they did have like the revelation of like, oh, there's an army being built here. I think they had several, honestly, on Obi-Wan's side, which is a lot easier to do considering the fact that like it's a mystery. And so it's like, of course, there's going to be revelations on his side.
Yeah.
And so I think they did a good job of that, of like, oh, although the whole thing with Sifo Dyas is like, who?
Yeah, exactly. From an audience perspective. Yeah.
Like I think that would have, again, been something that would have been interesting if they'd done that in one. Like had like little spurts of like, oh, we sent this Jedi to meet you. Oh, he never showed up again. Like investigate it, not find anything, or maybe like find something that's like, oh, who was involved in this? Or like maybe if you had Count Dooku, like there's something that like makes Count Dooku look guilty towards the end of the movie. And then you realize, oh, Sifo Dyas ordered these clones to be built. And then you're like, oh, that's what happened to him. Or like we're getting little bits and pieces of the puzzle there instead of just Jedi Master Sifo Dyas had us build these. He's like, Sifo Dyas has been 10 for 10 years. And you're like, I'm sorry, but who the actual flipping flip is Sifo Dyas?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that that's interesting too to think in light of some of the foreshadowing that they did effectively in the first one where, oh, Qui-Gon said these things that you now see reflected in episode 3, two movies later. You could have similar things where you just put in even like a line or two about Sifo Dyas in the first movie, or you know, something with Count Dooku in the first movie that could have paid off in the second movie, and you see that now that you've watched it, but you have no background for a lot of these characters, and so the way they introduce them makes it hard. I also got the impression, just with the clones, that the clones arriving at the end to like quote unquote save the day was supposed to be that surprise ending twist that we get, but the whole movie is kind of driving toward that if you're like listening at all. And so I don't really find it surprising. But yeah, that was the only thing I could think of in regards to an attempt by George Lucas to bring something like that in. Did you think that Anakin grew as a person through this movie, and does this movie have a theme?
I honestly, he kind of becomes a little more serious about his role here with the death of his mother, but honestly, not a lot. A lot of Anakin's growth happens between movies, which is interesting. A lot of Anakin's growth happens during the Clone Wars, actually, like between 2 and 3. Like he grows from being just this kid to becoming an esteemed general who's successfully leading one of the most effective clone units in the Galactic Republic. Like he becomes like almost legend to he is known throughout the entirety of the Jedi Order. Whereas like episode 2, it's like, oh, it's just, we don't know who this kid is, to now he is this like super successful general who commands the respect and attention of all of those within his army. A lot of that maturity happens then. He also like becomes more mature in like his relationship, because now he's in one and he knows how to actually like talk to women. He has a Padawan, and he starts to learn like what it means to be almost like a parental type of figure, to like teach someone else. That's a lot of his maturing process as well too. There's also like several arcs in the Clone Wars he goes through, like with Sigurian slavers, where he's figuring that out. And so like a lot of that maturity happens then. He definitely changes as a character in 3. Like that's, talk about a change.
And we'll definitely get to that for sure when we review that. I think this movie, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, especially, and it's interesting because I wasn't really a fan of the Clone Wars initially, but after having watched it, I definitely see, looking back, how much it had a valuable addition to some of these characters, especially Anakin. But the in regards to this movie, I think you definitely do get at least some maturity from him as he understands that he can't be this immature boy all the time. He has to have, you know, when it comes to committing to the people that he cares about and protecting them, it's going to take sacrifice and it's going to take effort on his part. He can't be this brash child that he has acted like in all of these previous times. It does go a bit dark with the Tusken Raiders, but overall he gets a little bit of development. Yeah. Worth noting. What did you think of the movie overall? Excuse me. Did it leave you satisfied? You ready for the next one? Are you kind of like, you know, whatever? What did you think?
I was ready for the next one. Okay. Not in like, oh, this was such an amazing movie, I can't wait for the next one. It's almost like a, I see where this is going kind of way. I need to see what the next movie's like. Because, like, I guess I was satisfied with the way it ended. I just, there's so much there that is not conveyed well, because you have this whole mystery and you have the dynamic of the clone army being built, and you have the dynamic of, like, they just, like, I don't think they portray even close to well enough how the Jedi should have responded to, oh, there's an army of clones that are armed and ready to fight and have been training for 10 years, and they were ordered by a Jedi that just disappeared 10 years ago, and they're just here conveniently at the time when there's an entire droid army on Geonosis.
Right.
No questions asked. We have an army.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I could see where that's coming from. Did you feel like that's a huge flaw in the movie, or is that more just an annoyance to you personally?
I think it's a flaw in the building of the world and the conveying of emotions, because you want your audience invested. And I feel like Attack of the Clones is just like, there's clones here. You've got
yes.
It's the entirety of the movie is called The Attack of the Clones. But when the clones attack, it's like the Jedi are about to die. They're in an arena surrounded by battle droids that just all of a sudden are here, and we had no idea they existed before. Count Dooku is about to execute Anakin, Obi-Wan, and a U.S. senator. And Mace Windu shows up. Tons of Jedi are dying. They're all surrounded. Look. Pew, 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 pew. We have clones exactly. Now.
And that feels very much like just setting up for the next movie, which is a little unfortunate. I mean, I know when I watched this, I recalled feeling pretty mediocre about it. I think honestly, like I see the flaws in episode one. That being said, there are some things in episode one that I would rather rewatch than scenes in episode two, just because of how it's structured. And Darth Maul's awesome. So there are things like that it's like, okay, I think that there is some serious points for improvement here. But it led us to episode three, which I am excited to review, because that is one that I think adds a lot of value to the franchise as a whole. Anyways, I don't know if you have any parting thoughts for us, Andrew. What'd you think? How would you rate it?
I'd probably give it like a 5.4 or something. I don't know. It has a lot of potential, but it didn't execute well. So probably like a 5, actually. Probably give like a 5 out of 9.
I think I'll leave mine where it's at, a solid 4, just slightly above a 4. And it adds to the development of the story. It's interesting what it adds, but I don't think that in regards to a great storyline, it's really much of that. So
I mean, hey, it's better than John Wick.
You were going to say something like that. Okay. All right. He had to bring it in there. And we're out. That's it. That's the pod. We hope you all enjoyed. We will be back, as always, next week. See you then.